We have the tremendous privilege to learn Chamishi of Yisro today. Of course, Yisro is a jam-packed, action-filled parsha, and this aliyah on the surface would not seem to be the action. This is in between the episode of Yisro and the actual giving of the Torah. So you would think, or the actual Aseres HaDibros, so you would think that this aliyah is not one to necessarily focus on so much. You would be wrong! This aliyah is very important, and perhaps it proves its own importance, because this aliyah is specifically about that time of preparation, is about everything that happens in anticipation of the giving of the Torah, and just how important that is, and perhaps focusing on that itself is its own educational message. So there's a lot to talk about in this aliyah. We won't be able to say everything, but at least be aware of some of what's going on in the fifth aliyah of Parshas Yisro. So the Torah tells us here in Perek Yates, Pasuk Zayin, Vayavo Moshe vayikra lezikne ha'am, vayasam lefneihem, eis kol dvarim ha'ela, asher tzivahu Hashem. So Moshe comes to the Zikanim, and he puts in front of them all of these things that Hashem had commanded. So what does it mean? Just what do the words mean? This idea that he placed it before them. And he went to the Zakenim and he placed it before them. So what exactly is going on? So the Ramban explains that this is like we find somewhere, other places in the Torah, Parshas Re'eh, for example, other places in Sefer Dvarim, where the message is, here, you have a choice. Here's what's out there. You have the good and the bad. You have the Torah and the opposite. What are you going to do? So we placed it before them. While Rav Sadra understood it more directly, more plainly, that it means that he taught them. And the Ramban quotes Rav Sadra and disagrees. But whichever reason or whichever understanding you take, so it's relevant to understanding why it is he's talking to the Zakenim. Why is that the case? Why is he gathering here the Zakenim? So the Arachayim understands that he's basically placing the choice in front of them. And he's saying that he has to gather the Zakenim first because it's very important that Moshe gets the right answer out of the Jews. And he's basically acting as God's agent to get an agreement from the Jewish people. So certainly Moshe is hoping for the right answer. So how could he make sure to get the right answer if he's going to go straight to the people? So who knows what they're going to say? Who knows if they'll be able to appreciate what they're receiving? But if he'll go to the Zakenim, okay, the Zakenim are wiser, more mature, have an appreciation for what's going on here. So they'll understand what the right answer should be. And then he can hope that they're going to transmit that to the people. While the Netziv, if you look at the Netziv's commentary, so he agrees with Rav Sadra that this is basically about teaching the facts of the Torah to the Jewish people. And this is a reference to the Torah Shebaal Peh. This is a very subtle, complex aspect of the Torah. So again, he's going to need a lot of teaching assistance. He's going to need people who are able to play that role in being the intermediary between him and the rest of the Jewish people to be able to convey these more difficult notions of the Torah Shebaal Peh, so he gets the Zakenim. Okay, so the next pasuk is certainly one that clearly indicates there's a lot of action in this parsha, very literally, and this aliyah specifically. This is not the only time you find this, but this is part of what is considered a major, major zchus for the Jews. One of the major selling points that we have as the Jewish people is found, at least in one sense, in this pasuk. The pasuk says, what was the answer? What did the Jews respond? Vayanu chol ha'am yachdav. They all answered together. Vayomru kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh. Try not to break out into song. But everything that God has said, we will do. Vayoshev Moshe esdivrei ha'am el Hashem. So this is half of the expression of Nasa and Nishma, because here they're saying Nasa before the Nishma, which is repeated later. So this is a part of this whole chaf that the Jews have, that the Gemara says, that they caught on to the secret of the angels. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos and Daf Peches, where you have a sugi about the Kabbalah Satorah, that Bishah Shekdimu, that at that time, that the Jews said Nasa before Nishma, so that was their great accomplishment, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very impressed with them, and he said, wow, who taught them the secret that the angels know how to use? Who taught them what life is all about? And because of that, each one of them got two crowns, one for Nasa and one for Nishma. So there's a lot to say about that, and we're not going to be able to say all of it, especially if you want to say other things in this Aliyah. So just to mention some of the interpretations, because it's not 100% obvious what's so great about that. It sounds like, okay, you know, we're blindly in love, whatever it is, we don't have to read the contract, we don't have to think about it, we're just going to jump in. And that is a tremendous show of affection and enthusiasm. But in other areas, we wouldn't consider that wise. We wouldn't say that somebody who buys a house without even looking, wow, that's the secret of life. That's a person who really knows what he's doing. Somebody who marries a woman without ever meeting her, if Mara says the Kiddushin, that's an Aveira. And that's a big problem. Somebody who signs a contract without reading it, wow, what a genius. You wouldn't say that. So what exactly is going on here? So there are a number of interpretations. Again, we'll just mention maybe two or three. One that's often quoted is that of the Beis Halevi, the original Rabbi Yehoshua Ber Soloveitchik, and he wrote it in a number of places because it's a big yisod. So you can find this in the Sefer HaChumash. Sefer HaChumash doesn't go so far. It only goes towards the end of Sefer Shmos, so, but this is it still has on Parshas Yisro. And you can find it, maybe he has a Mishpatim, I don't remember, but he has it somewhere in the Sefer HaTorah. And he has it at least two places in his Shilas and Shuvas. In the introduction to the Shilas and Shuvas, I believe in Simon Vav also, so he explains what's going on here. He says, first of all, what's so great about saying Nasa before Nishma? It seems like you're leaping before you look. It's not really so impressive. And it's also interesting that here the Gemara says that they get two crowns for that. It's a strange prize. Why should you get two crowns? Why don't you give them 10 crowns? Why don't you give them one big crown? What's pshat on two crowns? So the Beis Halevi explained that it's clear that we can't nasa without some nishma. That we can't do if we don't know what we're doing. So really, nasa includes nishma. Nasa really means Nishma v'nasa. But it's clear that we can't do any of the mitzvahs of the Torah if we don't first learn them to know what they are. So it's not like we're really just jumping in out of nowhere. Clearly we have a knowledge of the Torah, or we're going to have a knowledge of the Torah in order to accept it. But the whole half of the order, Davka v'shashik dimu, says the Beis Halevi, the whole point is that if the Jews had said Nishma v'nasa, so what would that mean? What would that have meant? That would mean we'll learn, because we need to know about the mitzvot in order to do them. We need to learn halacha l'masa, v'nasa, and then we'll do them. We'll use our knowledge for practical purposes. When we said nishma, when we said nasa v'nishma, therefore, what it really means is nishma v'nasa v'nishma. That we'll learn, and we'll do, and then we'll learn. The Beis Halevi says that's the chav, that we believe in a Talmud Torah that is in addition to that which is necessary to know what's practical. We still believe, even beyond that, that there is a value to Talmud Torah in and of itself. That's the tremendous chav of the Jewish people, that they understood that the learning itself is going to have an accomplishment, is going to have a value. That's where Kadosh Baruch Hu says, now they really understand what my whole message is here. And therefore the idea of getting two crowns is because the flipping of the order made it from one Kabbalah into two. That had they said Nishma v'nasa, it would have been one Kabbalah Satorah. We'll do the mitzvos, and we'll learn the mitzvos so that we know what to do. But because they flipped the order, and they said Nasa v'nishma, it turned into two things. We'll learn so we know what to do, and we'll do the mitzvos. And beyond that, we're going to learn also. In that vein, they say that that's how Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, for example, understood the Gemara later on in Sanhedrin. We'll see if we have an opportunity to look at it this year, where the Gemara says that there are certain mitzvos which don't seem to have ever happened. Ben Sora Mora is a whole parak in Sanhedrin. So there's an opinion of the Gemara that Ben Sora Mora never happened in real life. It never will happen. Well, how you have lost the Leos. So the Gemara asks, well then, why do we have a parish in the Torah about something that's not going to happen? It never did happen. So the Gemara has this answer, drosh v'kabel schar. That you learn it and you'll get schar. So it sounds like it's saying that, oh, you need the schar Talmud Torah, so the Torah taught us this parasha, even though it's not relevant practically. And Shaul and others ask, well, certainly enough that is practical. You could spend your whole life studying the principles that you do need to know. So we need a few extra mitzvahs. The Gemara talks about three mitzvahs. We need a few extra parshas from the Torah, because otherwise we'll run out. You won't have enough Schar Talmud Torah. So he explains along the same lines that there's a special chat. We believe very much in learning halacha l'maisa, la'asukei shmaisa, libid hofasa is a tremendous thing. But also to recognize that Talmud Torah has a value independent of that. That's a tremendous chap, and that's what the Jews are perhaps praised for here. The Beis Halevi applies that both halachically within his tshuvas, as far as analyzing different view from the Talmud Torah. He talks about it conceptually in a few places. It's a big idea that he has. And his great-grandson and namesake, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik of our yeshiva, so he has a different approach in the, could be published elsewhere also, but you can read this in Reflections of the Rav. More easy to read version of some of the Rav's Torah that was designed for high school students. So in the Reflections of the Rav, so there's a whole essay there where he discusses the same question, that it doesn't seem to be too impressive that somebody's going to jump in without checking out the details. And he explains that there's two different ways in which we connect to things. We connect to things intellectually, what we call the lower intellect, the Ratzon HaTachton. And that's where you go through all the facts and you add them up and you make a pros and cons list and you try to figure out, is this a good purchase or not? But there's also the Ratzon HaElyon. There's this idea where you connect on a supernatural level to something. It's not about the details. And the Jews had that type of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they're able to declare, it's not about making my list and counting up the pros and the cons. It's about recognizing this relationship. And that's where that get praised. And the truth is, you could say that the great-grandfather and the great-grandson, maybe it's compatible, that the Jews recognize that Kadosh Baruch Hu and they have a relationship. It's not just about the details of that interaction. And that's also what the Talmud Torah, above and beyond the practical necessities, represents that ongoing keshem. It's interesting also to note that there is a suggestion in the Sefer Salm Derech. Salm Derech was the shiurim of Rav Simcha Zissel Breuz, Rashi Dechayim and Yeshiva. So he suggests that the idea is that the Jews chat, the big raz, the big soul that they figured out, was that Torah only really gets deepened when it is applied practically. When you recognize that it's not simply a intellectual discipline, obviously it's more than that for other reasons, but even within its study, that it's something that gets implemented into the real world, and that's where you go to a whole new level of chachma. The Jews who chapped that focus on nasa, that was the big chap. And he refers to the pasuk in Sefer Dvarim in Parak Chav Tes, where the pasuk says, "V'shamartim misdiver habris hazos v'asisim osam l'man taskilu." That you'll do the mitzvos and you will then become enlightened as to what you are doing, that the practice of the mitzvos is itself a part of the Talmud Torah. And to synergize a little bit, we could say this correlates to what we've been talking about this week, about that a yachid mumful rabbin has to be somebody who's not only book smart but also is experienced, also has put it into practice. And we discussed a little bit the different milas of how one becomes educated. So that's also part of the message here, that yes, learning Torah is its own experience, but putting that into practice, and to actually practice it, is a whole new level. And it's also really the basis of our religion, because our religion has such an emphasis on mitzvos maisios, that we believe in all of these eternal principles, but we believe that they're not only to be studied abstractly, but that it's necessary to have a life of practice. It's necessary to actually put them into play in real life, and that is a manifestation of the Chachmah, and perhaps that's what the Jews are expressing at that time. There is an interesting observation by the Meshal Chachmah here, which is also in line of what you see in a lot of other Sfarim, opens up a lot of other discussions. that here the idea of Nasa v'nishma later on, and just Nasa here, so the Mesh Chachma suggests that there is an ideal, there is a need perhaps, to perform all Tariyag mitzvahs, to observe all 613 mitzvahs. But none of us can do that by ourselves, because most of us, all of us, there's no one person who all the mitzvahs apply to. So no one individual can fulfill all 613 mitzvahs. So how do you fulfill the mitzvahs that are not relevant to you? So he points out here an idea, which you find in other svarim, it's interesting, that you're mekayim the other mitzvahs through learning about them. Right, we know that we have that idea by korbanos. The Gemara says, based on the pasuk, that neshama parim svaseinu, that when we can't actually bring the korbanos, so we learn about them, and that's a way to have it considered as if we fulfill them. So that's all very well and good for kachin. Is that true about other areas of halacha also? Let's say you're on a desert island, and it's sukkahs, and you don't have any luach. It's a strange desert island. You have a shulchan aruch, you don't have any palm trees. So you want to learn about Hilchos Lulav instead of fulfilling it. So can you be Makayim Mitzvah Lulav through study? Just like Korbanos? So that was a whole discussion, and Mabit thought yes. Chafetz Chaim, in his Hakdamah to Sefer and Kachim, he discusses that Kachim he thought was special, that there's a unique component to Kachim that Lulav is counted as learning. But the whole discussion, is it perhaps true that you can fulfill all the mitzvahs by learning about them, if it's not possible to actually do them. Ephraim Greenblatt, in his Chuvah Rivas Ephraim, has in one of his volumes, he has a Chuvah about this, where he suggests that that's true, you're mekayim all the mitzvahs through learning about them. Happens to be that Chuvah, if I recall correctly, in one of the volumes, it's Siman Taryag, number 613, in one of his Chuvahs. So he says you can be mekayim all Taryag mitzvahs through learning about them. So the Master Chachma says that that's the idea, that we want to say we'll fulfill all the mitzvahs. But it's not practically feasible for any one of us to fulfill all the mitzvahs. So what's the Eitzah? So we say Nasa V'Nishma, that we will do all the mitzvahs, and the mitzvahs that we individually can't do, we'll learn about them. So it's Ki'ilu, we did all of them. So that's Nasa V'Nishma. But here it's just Nasa. Why is it Nasa without Nishma? Because there's another way to fulfill all the mitzvahs, and that is if you're connected to the klal, if you're a part of the tzibur, and collectively the Jewish people are performing all the mitzvahs, so then no one individual has to do all the mitzvahs. And therefore, in this case, where it says the whole nation answered together, the emphasis on the yachdav, so that's why we say nasa, because we don't even have to say nasa v'nishma here, we'll all perform all the mitzvahs, because collectively we will all do it. Saw so once in a sefer, the sefer was called Zivchei Shlomo, written by Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Friedman, said that there is a medrash, often commented on medrash, which says, Pasuk says in Tehillim, Bakei Shalom v'rad fehu, that we should chase after peace. So the medrash has a comment, that lo motzinu redifu b'mitzvos, that when it comes to mitzvos, we don't find that we have to chase after them, that if you don't have a mitzvah that's presenting itself right now, we're not mechuyev in it. So you don't find that you're obligated to put yourself in a context of the mitzvah. So it came up, for example, the past year, it was the Shemitah year, so they used to say you should buy land in Eretz Yisrael before the Shemitah year so that you can specifically become obligated in the Shemitah, otherwise you don't have any chelik in it. That's a whole discussion. Do you have to chase after mitzvah opportunities? So as the Medrash says, no, we don't chase after mitzvahs, but shalom you have to chase after. So the Pasuk says, Bak Yishalom v'red faith. So the Sefer explained, what's the difference? Because we don't need to chase after mitzvahs, because we understand that not every mitzvah is going to be shayach to us. Only mitzvahs that are actually obligatory to us as an individual, those are the mitzvahs that we have to do. We don't have to personally fulfill every mitzvah, because we're a part of the klal, we're a part of the unit, so the unit ultimately is fulfilling all the mitzvahs. But that's assuming that you're connected to everybody. That's assuming that there's shalom, that we're ba'achdus, that we're igurecha. So shalom we have to make sure we have. Because if there's no shalom, then we're going to be personally responsible for all the mitzvahs. But if we have shalom, we're all about good achas, so then we don't have to fulfill every mitzvah personally, and that's why we don't have to chase after mitzvahs. So along the same lines, as Meshach Hafna says, that here in this pasuk, we just say nasa, because we're connected to everyone else, and that's going to be enough. So there's a lot of discussion. So the first part of the pasuk, as you see, there's a lot to say about, and there's much, much more to say about. It's also a parshas mishpatim topic, so I'll have to come back to it. But the second part of the pasuk is also a little challenging in a different way. So Moshe reports back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu the response. So what, he didn't know? God's waiting on Shpilkis, trying to say, oh, I hope they'll go for it, I hope they'll go. He didn't hear, so what's pshat? Why does Moshe have to report back? So Rashi addresses this, and Rashi says it's derech eretz, that it's not really necessary in this case, but it's proper. Moshe's teaching us what to do. If somebody sends you for a message, and then you think, well, they probably found out what the answer is, or they could have overheard, it's still not derech eretz to not answer the question. You're supposed to come back and report what happened. So Moshe, even though it's not necessary here, Moshe is teaching us derech eretz. That's what Rashi says. But others suggest a little differently. The Aruch Chaim says that this was Moshe basically praising the Jews to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's basically looking to God and saying, God, you heard that? Wow. Aren't they awesome? And basically, as the Aruch Chaim says, it's in the sense of the pasuk, Mika Amchi Yisrael. I was saying, look, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, could you ask for any better response? Isn't that phenomenal? What a great answer they just gave. That's what the pasuk is conveying. Rav Soloveitchik quoted from his ancestor going beyond the Beis Halevi, the Chaim Volozhiner, that Chaim Volozhiner was addressing something else, that the Jews, just before this, had questioned if God was in their midst at all. And now, all of a sudden, they're so enthusiastically committing Nasa V'Nishma, so Moshe is not so much reporting that to God, he's attributing to that God, to God. He's saying, basically, this was a nace, this was an unbelievable turnaround. So this turnaround, so Moshe is attaching that to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, was saying that this is something supernatural, this is a phenomenon. The next pasuk is important to also to understand, because it's probably one of the Kari Emunah, as far as the Rambam understands. The pasuk says, V'yomer Hashem al Moshe, hinei anochi boi lecha ba'av ha'anan ba'avor yishmu ha'am b'dabri imach v'gam b'cha yaninu l'olam. V'yageid Moshe es divrei ha'am el Hashem. So God says, I'm going to come in the midst of this cloud, and they're going to believe in me, and they're going to believe in you, Moshe Rabbeinu. That's also going to be a part of the message. So this is one of the Kari Emunah that the Rambam tells us, that we have to believe that Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah was unique, Moshe was the transmitter of the Torah, and in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, he goes into this in more length, and some of the other Rishonim commenting on this pasuk go into this in more length as well, that Moshe Rabbeinu pulled off a lot of miracles. But those miracles, that was not so that he could prove himself. Well, each miracle had a need. Each miracle had a localized purpose, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah. But here, the fact that Moshe is recognized as the transmitter of the Torah, as a unique Navi, so that's all because they witnessed this whole experience. That's something much more fundamental, and that's a premise that has to be ingrained within us. That's one of our core understandings of how the Torah was transmitted. So the next pasuk goes on to say, "V'yomer Hashem al Moshe, Leich al Ha'am, V'kidashtem Hayom u'Machar, V'kibsu Simlosam." So God says to Moshe, "You should go to the people and V'kidashtem." So what does V'kidashtem mean? So it sounds like it means they should be sanctified. But Unklus has a language of they should be prepared, they should be designated. Ustizamnun, and Rav Soloveitchik commented in many drushes an idea that is often quoted in his name, Ein Kedusha B'li Hachana, that you can't have Kedusha, you can't have holiness without preparation. Holiness is not something that just happens to you. It happens because you put in the effort, because you're prepared, because you're ready to receive it. So the fact that here this pasuk, Kedusha and Hazmana and designation and preparation are all understood as being within the same framework, as all being connected, so that's a reference to this idea that that's a necessary step for Kedusha to exist. It says Hayom Machar, so that adds up to 2 days, Pashtus. So we actually waited 3 days. The Shechinah didn't show up until Shabbos. So Rashi explains that this was something that, I should explain later, this was something that Moshe added on his own. Moshe was Moshe from Echad Midaito. There are a few things, a few steps that Moshe took on his own that HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed with, and one of them was that he added on a day, and some of the Sfarim point out that Moshe wanted also to associate Matan Torah with Shabbos. He wanted Matan Torah to be on Shabbos. And when we daven on Shabbos, so we say, Yismach Moshe from Matan Eschelko, that Moshe is credited with this Matana, with the fact that the giving of the Torah was on Shabbos, and that association is made. So that is also a part of the process here. The next pasuk continues this idea then of preparation. You see that God agrees to their third day. V'hoyu nechonim l'yom ha'shlishi ki v'yom ha'shlishi yered Hashem l'einei chol ha'am al har Sinai. So this idea, l'einei chol ha'am, so Rashi has a comment here, which is of a kind that you find in a lot of Midrashim, that there was a mass refuah that happened at this point in time. That people who couldn't see were suddenly able to see. So, le'enei chol ha'am, everybody saw. What do you mean everybody saw? What about people who were blind, people who couldn't see? So, the message must be that everyone is able to see, even those who before that couldn't see. And Chazal and other places bring from other psukim, people who couldn't hear were able to hear, people who had any kind of a chisaron, so that was fixed. They were healed at that point. I've heard it suggested in the past that that's why so many hospitals are named after Har Sinai. You have Mount Sinai Hospital, you have Cedar Sinai Hospital, that there is this idea that Har Sinai, you think, okay, that's an appropriate name for yeshiva, what do they got to do with the hospital? So we see that Har Sinai is also associated with this mass refuah. So there is a long essay about this in the Sefer Dibros Tzvi. I think we quoted him a few weeks ago when we were talking about Ayin Hara, these interesting essays in general. So he talks about the idea, you know, what is this, just like a happy day, so grant everyone favors, and just celebrate, so do good things for everybody. It seems like this refuah is more integral to the Matan Torah experience. It's not just that everything good was going on, so people also got healed. But it has to do, in a mystical sense, and also in a mission sense, that the Jews understand that everything that they have, all of their resources and all of their physical resources, all of their actual body, all of the body parts, everything is there in order to fulfill God's will. And as they're being charged and giving this mandate of actually fulfilling the specific mitzvos, which Reb Chaim Vital wrote about and others wrote about, the mitzvos correlate to different parts of the body, and we find different indications like that in various places in the rabbinic literature. So basically they're being told, okay, everything you have is towards the service, and that which wasn't working before all of a sudden is now snapped back into life, is given both spiritual nourishment, which turns into the physical nourishment. Hi.
Since we said before that this is also part of the Ikarei Emuna, we wanted to make sure that everyone can see and hear what was being said to Moshe. So maybe that's also a reason why it's very important at this point for everyone to be healed, is that they have to be able to experience these things and to believe in Moshe.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true as well. And, you know, that's an interesting point to observe, that you're saying that if anybody was lacking in any of the senses, so then they wouldn't have the full Matan Torah experience. The Matan Torah experience is crucial, which is an idea which also this Aliyah is relevant to. We'll just mention it now, that we know that we have a mitzvah, one of the six zechiros. We have a handful of mitzvahs that are directed towards remembering certain things in the Torah. It's a question how to count, but it's most commonly counted that there are six. So one of the six is the mitzvah of Maimon Har Sinai, remembering the experience of Maimon Har Sinai. And that mitzvah, it's a good question when we fulfill it. So we have mitzvah Zechiras HaMalek, and we have Shabbos Parsha Zohar. We have a mitzvah remembering Shabbos and make Kiddush. So when do we fulfill the mitzvah of Zechiras Maimon Har Sinai? So the Magen Avraham writes, we have a whole yontif for it. We have Chag HaShavuos, that's the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of Zechiras Maimon Har Sinai. But the point is, as the Rishonim explain, that this isn't about the Torah. This isn't about saying that you should remember the whole content of the Torah. This is saying specifically, remember this day, remember what happened. And that has to do with Emunah on some level, as Aryeh is saying, that we have to fully experience it so that we can internalize all of its faith principles and remember them. But also, it's because we need to have enthusiasm in order to fully accomplish what we need to accomplish. And the Gemara says that v'chol yom yubeinecha kechadoshim, that every day we should feel like we're at Maamar Har Sinai, we should feel like it's a new experience. So therefore, in order to keep that alive, we have a mitzvah to remember this whole display, and that's a part of it. Okay, we'll probably come back to that idea. So in any case, then the pasuk continues, V'higbalta es am saviv lemur, Yishamru lachem alos bahar, negoa bekakteyu, kol negeya bahar mos yumos, lo sigabo yad, kisakol yisakel, o yaro yare, im behema, imish lo yichyeb, im shocha yovel, heima yalu bahar. So this is an interesting discussion, that we're not allowed to go onto that har, and the animals aren't allowed to go to that har. There's a famous Mi'iri in Sanhedrin who talks about why Mesechta Sanhedrin asks what type of a bezdin would you need in order to properly deal with a shore that would go on Har Sinai, Shore Sinai Kama. But the pasuk is telling us that there was a prohibition to go on to Har Sinai, and the mountain became Kodesh. And the Chafetz Chaim has a comment here that Chafetz Chaim is commenting on Torah, that you see, if a mountain becomes Kodesh through interaction with Torah, so you can only imagine how much more a willing human being who decides to engage with the content of Torah becomes holy, and therefore, the more so, the kavod that's due to Talmidei Chachamim, that's a straight kavod chomer from this. But the converse of that, which is also interesting, is that as much as we have this whole direction about treating Har Sinai properly, so this was a transient command. That nowadays, so we know, we still have an issue of going out to Har Abayis, the whole machlokas. I certainly have to be very nizer for its kedusha. It's an ongoing controversy, both halachic and otherwise today. But Har Sinai is not even in Jewish hands at all, and we don't have any prohibition of going on to Mount Sinai today. Not something that lasts.
We don't even know where it is.
We don't even know where it is, but we don't have even the concept of prohibition of going on to Har Sinai. So the Rav suggested that, and this is a slightly nuanced idea, because we'll also mention a few possibly contradictory thoughts in a few minutes, but that the Har Abayis, so that's where the Jews come to worship God. The Jews go to engage in active avodah. But Har Sinai was essentially a passive experience for the Jews. So therefore, yes, it was holy at that time, but it doesn't last, it doesn't stick. While the Kiddush of Har Abayis of Yerushalayim, so that brought on the Shechin experience, and that also goes back to the Akedah, to Rav Avinu, to acts of sacrifice by the Jewish people. So that's a type of Kiddusha that not only is there in the moment, but continues for the future, and that's distinct even from Har Sinai. Okay, so to skip ahead a little bit. All right, so Yerid Moshe Menahar Al-Am, Vayikadesh Yas'am, Vayichabsus Al-Osam, Vayomer Al-Am, Vayidachar Moshe Al-Shashyabim, Al-Tikshu Al-Isha, and the Pasuk continues, Vayhi Vayom HaShlishi Vayos HaBoker, Vayhi Kolos Uvrokim, Vayanan Kaved Al-Ahar, Vayikol Shofar Chazak Mod, Vayicharat Kol-Am Asher B'Matim. So you see that the Kolos and Brachim are here, the whole thunder and lightning. This is all very dramatic. And that's there to make a point. That's there to impress upon the Jewish people. And like we just mentioned a minute ago, the mitzvah to remember the whole experience, to preserve the excitement. Rav Schwab has a comment here that Matan Torah is about having the love of Torah embedded in your soul. And that's, so for example, last year we talked about how the Rambam says you can force a get when it's a mitzvah, even though the get has to be given willingly. So he writes about the pintel yid, that internally the Jew always has a tshuka for Torah, wants to do mitzvah. So Schwab notes that that's what was happening here, that the love of the Torah was being embedded within the Jewish people. We also find similarly the idea that an ober, that an unborn baby, is learning the Torah in his mother's womb, which Schechter writes about this in the Sharab from Soloveitchik, that even though he's going to forget the whole thing. So you might say, what's the point? The point is not the details of the Torah, but that he should internalize a love for Torah and always feel a yearning to reconnect to it. So that's what this whole experience of Har Sinai was engendering. And it's also noteworthy that this idea that the Kol Sabrakim, the Ramban has a comment later on, the Torah says that it's this is there l'nasos eschem, that the Kol Sabrakim was there in order to, l'nasos is sometimes translated as to raise up, but Zvi Futner has a whole discussion about the Ramban's comment that it's there to test the Jewish people. And he explains that the Torah is only going to have an impact on people who have an appreciation for something that's magnificent. So nowadays, people often complain that our youth is jaded and is bored and that everything's about been there, done that, nothing excites us. So if that's the way you are, nothing impresses you, so the Torah is not going to impress you either. You're not going to be able to have a koach espilus. You're not going to be able to be amazed by anything. So we need to have this incredible, awesome display to see, do the Jews have the ability to recognize what's fantastic, what's amazing, and to turn that into an appreciation for the Torah itself. So the Jews trembled over there, and the Gemara understands that that's a mentality we're supposed to preserve, that the Torah was given in the context of Emu V'Yira, that the Jews were trembling, it was awe-inspiring, they were amazed, and so too, the Torah should be studied the same way. So strictly speaking, that means that one, the Gemara says, that they should learn Torah standing up. But that's the proper way to do it. We're trying to recreate Har Sinai. Then the Gemara says that ultimately we realize that we're just not strong enough for that, that we're not going to be able to focus. So we're makil, and we allow ourselves to sit and not to always stand. But it's interesting, perhaps paradoxically, Shalvechik also explained that the halakos of Kriyas HaTorah, that when we lay, so what we're trying to do is we're trying to recreate that experience of Har Sinai. That's the purpose of laying. So the idea that laying requires a minyan. So that minyan is not because it's a davar shebekedusha. We know that a davar shebekedusha requires a minyan, but if Salvechik suggested that Kriyas HaTorah is not a davar shebekedusha. Why not? Because a davar shebekedusha, as he understood it, is something that's responsive, like we find in Kedusha, and is something that proclaims the greatness of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Kriyas HaTorah is actually not a davar shebekedusha. Interestingly, Birchas HaTorah, that's recited before the Aliyah, that might be a davar shebekedusha. So that's why you find some people have a practice to stand for the brachos of the Aliyah, but not for the laning itself, because they're assuming that it's the brachos that are davar shebekedusha, but not the laning. So why does laning need a minyan? Because the Torah was given, the Maimid Klal Yisrael was given in the presence of the entire Jewish people. So we need a minyan to represent that, to evoke the entire Jewish people. So too, you might say, all right, so then Davka, we should stand for Kriyas HaTorah, not because of the Darsh Kedusha, standing for Darsh Kedusha, but because that was the way the Torah was given. So indeed, that's the practice that many do have, Mami Rutenberg and others, that one should stand for Kriyas HaTorah. But to the extent that one doesn't, so presumably it's like the Gemara says, that ideally we're trying to recreate that experience. But this component of standing, so that's something that we're not always strong enough to do and to maintain our focus. So practically speaking, we're not so machbid on that part. But the idea that we're trying to maintain this atmosphere, that's still what we're looking for. So the Gemara asks along those lines, why do we have the idea of making a joke during Shia? The Gemara says that Rav would start his Shia with a milsik duchsa in order to get the students more involved, in order to open up their minds. So the Gemara asks, those discuss, why do we allow that if we're supposed to have an atmosphere of Eimu V'Yavresis V'Zeah? And there are two answers we find there, that either it's the difference between the beginning and the end or the middle, or the Rebbe's allowed to joke, the Talmidim may have to be deadly serious. But in any event, so we have this idea of a Yecharad, so that's a notion that we're told to preserve within our Talmud Torah. So there's a lot more to say about the rest, but we will, the Yecharad gets repeated again to Psukim later. But the Pasuk in between, there is quite a lot said about. The last Pasuk also a lot said about. We'll probably spend most of the rest of the time we have talking about this Pasuk Yitzayin over here. That Pasuk Yitzayin says, first, Vayotze Moshe es ha'am, l'kras ha'elohim, and ha'machaneh, v'yis yatzvu b'sachtis ha'har. So there's a lot said about both the first half and the second half of that pasuk. So first of all, what does it mean that Moshe is going out among the people? So there is an idea here that you find in the Medrash, a quite striking idea. It's in the Shirim Rabbah, the Pirkei de Belazar, that he had to wake everybody up. He was the counselor. And essentially, the Jews all overslept. They went to sleep the night before, and they were still asleep that morning. Didn't have alarm clocks. And Moshe went to wake everybody up. So this is a very striking idea. And the Magen Avraham quotes the Zohar. It says that the reason we stay up all night, Shavuos night, the idea of Tikkun Leil Shavuos, is as a tikkun for this. That when the Torah was first given, the Jews were asleep. So when we commemorate the giving of the Torah on Shavuos, so we stay up all night. So there is a notion, it's interesting, that the Schwab has a comment, and the Rashiv of Karbiyavna of Goldbach has the same idea, but at much greater length, and as say for Asuf's Marachas, but they both say basically the same kind of idea, that it wasn't just that the Jews fell asleep, that they didn't appreciate the importance of this day, that they didn't think this was something to set their alarms for. It's that they knew that Nevuah often comes in the context of sleep. And there's a reason for that. The Rosh Yeshiva goes into great length about this, that when you're awake, you're confronting the actual physical world. It's full of limitations. And when you're asleep, you're separated from the physical world and you're much more open to spiritual connection. So the Jews thought, okay, they're getting the Torah, head to bed, go to sleep, and when you're in a trance, so to speak, that's when you're going to connect spiritually. That's when you're going to have this experience that could only come in that kind of context. So it's a reasonable havamina, but Moshe had to teach them that, no, that's true for Nevuah, it's true for prophecy, but Talmud Torah you have to be awake for. Talmud Torah is an involved, intense experience where you have to participate and where you have to work. And that's a whole different mindset. So they were wrong, but they weren't crazy wrong. It wasn't wrong in the sense that they were lazy and didn't appreciate it, but they thought that this required a different kind of mindset. And you find this also in other religions, the idea of going into some other kind of a mindset, and drugs, and going into a trance in order to attain spirituality. And we're being taught here that Torah is not about that. Torah is about being awake and engaged and working and actually getting the content that way. So in that sense also, you could say that when the Magen Avraham says that as a tikkun for being asleep, so we stay up all night, so he's not saying that, oh, we didn't appreciate it, so now we have to show we appreciate it more. No, it could mean that. But it could mean also that just we didn't recognize that Talmud Torah requires that kind of actual work and attention and effort, and therefore we show that we do get that now by staying up all night and working hard and pushing. And that's perhaps the message. So then the next part of the pasuk is very, very well known and a lot to say about, but we'll just say for a few minutes. The pasuk says, "Vayisi atzvu b'tachtis ha'har." So there they are all gathered, standing at the bottom of the mountain. So what's the message there? So the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Peches, that same Daf I mentioned before, has this famous imagery that God took the har and he turned it upside down like some kind of a flask and he held it above them. So Rashi just quotes that part. Rashi doesn't quote other implications. So the idea that the mountain is on top of them, so that could mean a lot of things. It could be good things, it could be bad things. So one idea that you find here for the Rav Shechter many times at engagement parties, we used to have engagement parties here in YU, I don't know if they still do, but when I was in college, so they would have more lounge, they'd have engagement parties. So if Rav Shechter would speak, he would sometimes quote this idea that we know that there is a marriage between God and the Jewish people, and that Har Sinai, Maimon Har Sinai, represents all the details of this marriage. And that Moshe was a shliach l'kedushin, and the Rav comments that's why he had to report back to God, as we saw in the beginning of the Aliyah. Why did he have to report back? Because the shliach has to come back and say his answer. That's a part of the process. And the luchos were the kesef kedushin, the luchos were the ring, and the har was the chuppah. It's all representing this process. So then the Shach would say, so what was the kolos of Brachim? What was the lightning and the thunder? That was the engagement party. You have to have recognition of what's going on. That was all a part of the process. But this idea that there is a nisuin between God and the Jewish people, so that's a crucial imagery. And again, from Rashi here, that might be what we're getting at. But you're probably also familiar that it's also, by the way, the Rav comment, that's why they had to say nasa, because it has to be willing, you know, the kala has to agree. So we needed all those elements. But if you know the language of the Gemara, there's a whole different imagery there, that the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu essentially compelled them to accept the Torah. So you have to accept the Torah because I'm holding the mountain over your head, and take it or I'm going to drop it. If you're not going to take the Torah, then Sham Tehek Varaspa, and that's where your burial is going to be. So the Gemara says that that would have been a Modar Rabbah Araisa. That would have been a great excuse we could have had if we ever get in trouble for not following the Torah. So we could say we never were willing to accept it. It was forced on us under duress. We're not looking to take this on ourselves. And then the Gemara says that ultimately it was all straightened out in the time of Purim, that after the Nes with Achashverosh, with Haman, so the Pasuk says over there, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim, and the Gemara says here in Shabbos that Kimu mashikiblu kvar, that they then upheld what they had previously accepted under duress, and they accepted the Torah willingly. So there's a lot of discussion to be had about that. There is a, first of all, it's hard to read the Pesukim, because the Pesukim say that the Jews had Nasim and Ishma. And as we mentioned before, it's not like these are two completely separated ideas. The Gemara that praises the Jews for saying Nasim and Ishma, and the Gemara that says that the Jews were forced to accept the Torah, are both on the same daf and Shabbos. They're both there, right, one after each other. So it's not like you can miss the juxtaposition there. So you have to figure out what's going on. It's clear. So Tosfos asked the question. Others asked the question, but there's a clear steerer, which is, you can't miss. You can't miss it from the Pesukim, and you can't miss it from reading the statements in Chazal. So there are various approaches. Tosfos suggests that this was for the future. They accepted it then. They wanted to make sure that they remained committed to it. Later, while there is a very often quoted statement in the Tanchuma, in Parshas Noach, where it says that it's a distinction between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh, that the written Torah we were willing to accept. Torah Shebichsav, okay, that's fine. Torah Shebaalpeh, with all the chumras and with all the details, that we couldn't handle, that sounded like too much, we couldn't accept it, so that needed kfir. So you could say, also, that this ties in to the previous imagery that we talked about, the wedding imagery, that the whole idea of a commitment to marriage and things like that is that you commit to a relationship where you don't know everything, and you can't say that you know for sure that everything about this person is going to be perfect forever. But the whole nature of a commitment in a marriage is that you know there are certain things that you like and that you want to stay connected to. So if you want those connections, then you have to connect to that person in totality. If there are certain things you admire about this woman you want to marry, so then you have to marry her completely in order to have those in your life. So too, God's saying, okay, you like the Torah Shebichsav, that's nice, but you're not getting it without a commitment to the whole package. You're not getting it without recognizing that everything comes together. The Torah Shebaalpeh is also a part of it. So essentially, these two imageries, the marriage imagery and the Har Kegigis forcing imagery, really could be connected, that yes, they get tremendous chus, they get great credit for recognizing that they want to say Nasa Vanishma, they want to jump in, but they also have to understand, so I'm happy that you like the Torah that much, but also know that it requires a commitment in its totality. The Torah Shebichsav has got to be there as well. So somehow, there is a shift here, Purim time. It's interesting, there is a comment that Meshech Chachma has, Maral has a comment along these lines also, that this whole idea of compulsion, it doesn't mean really that they were forced on the threat of death. It means that, in a more literal sense, that they were made an offer they couldn't refuse, that basically it was irresistible, that they saw such a gilui, they saw such a revelation of God's Kedusha and of the Torah's Kedusha, that standing there at that moment, there was no way to say no. It wasn't possible. So in that sense, they were essentially compelled. So on one sefer it says, that's why the question they always ask That in Dayenu, we say that we're grateful for this, even without anything else, we're grateful for that, we're grateful for that. So everyone always asks that we say, Ilu Kervanu l'fnei HaSinai v'nos l'anos HaTorah Dayenu, if you brought us to HaSinai, and you hadn't given us the Torah, that also would have been good. What do you mean that also wouldn't be good? We went to the HaSinai to get the Torah, so if we didn't get the Torah, it still would have been something? So the suggestion is, yeah, there was such a revelation of godliness at that point, that itself was an accomplishment, even without getting the Torah itself. So the Jews essentially couldn't say no. Perhaps parallel to that, some understand also that the idea of Shamtei Kerostan, that your burial will be here if you don't accept it, also wasn't literal. It means that you're just simply not going to have a future. You're not going to have a meaningful life if you don't want to agree to this bris, if you're not going to agree to the Torah. So within that imagery, so it's interesting. So this is twice today, but it doesn't happen so often, but it happens twice in the past few minutes, that once again, Rav Schwab and the Rashid of Karen Biavna say essentially the same thing, that the Goldbach and the Asufas Marachas has a much, much longer version of what Rav Schwab says, but they're basically the same idea, that the whole resolution here, and together with the context of Purim, that somehow Purim was what made it then all complete, was that at the time of Har Sinai, so the Jews were exposed to this tremendous divine spirit, this tremendous godliness, and it was overwhelming, and there was no way to say no at that point. There was no way that they could have said no. So, fine. So they could say later on, when life gets harder in different contexts, they could say, listen, you can't expect us to keep the Torah. Because we kept the Torah, we accepted the Torah in a context where it was impossible to say no. We were exposed to such a powerful revelation. Nobody would be there at that moment and say, I'm not going to take this. But later on, when life is not so God-filled, when God's presence is not so obvious, so you can't expect us to continue to adhere to the Torah. Interestingly, this is evocative of Halacha L'maisa, the statement of the Chazon Ish in Yerideya and Hilchos Shechita, where he talks about the idea of an apikoros, somebody who has the status of a real heretic in Judaism. So he writes that nowadays we don't have people like that, because in order to really be blamed for denying the Torah, you have to be exposed to nisim gluyim, you have to be able to witness God's presence in an undeniable fashion and still say, I deny it nonetheless. But nowadays we don't have that kind of exposure, so somebody who makes a mistake, okay, you can't hold them as responsible as the halacha would otherwise envision. And the Meshech Chachma understands that idea specifically in this context also. So the connection to Purim is that the Jews could have said, listen, all right, when everything is so obvious, all right, then we'll follow the Torah. But after that, you can't expect us to have that kind of commitment when God's presence is not so manifest. And then came the nace of Purim, which was Behester, right? That's what we understand, that Esther represents Hester, as the Gemara in Kulin says. God's presence was not obvious. Everything was done in a very subtle way. God's name is not mentioned in Megillas Esther. And yet, if you pay attention, so you recognize that this was a nace. And if you want to read it inside, it's worth it, especially as we get closer to Purim. So if you look in this essay I'm referring to, in the Asufas Marachas, the Rashid of Karen Biavne, in this week's Parsha, in this Pasuk, so he talks at great length about how you see throughout the whole story of Megillas Esther that it's all about, you know, Mordechai saying to Esther that it's Hashgacha, that you're in this place at this time, and who knows, if you don't do this, the Jews will be fine, but you'll be forgotten, that powerful line of Megillah. It's all about this idea that Mordechai's whole Hashgacha was that even if it's not so obvious, I'm telling you, God is here, and the Jews come to recognize that. So through that experience, so they're able to see that even when it's not so obvious, it's not so blatant that God is present, then God is still present. And then the attitude shifts, and then they're willing to accept the Torah, not just at that moment, but constantly, and to recognize that it's always binding on them. And again, as we get closer to the Purim, I'd recommend anyone who wants to read that essay inside would see some interesting ideas. So we'll leave off on a point of somewhat synergy. Basically, it'll be a segue for us on Sunday. So just to end up with one point, so the Maharal also comments that it's still interesting if we're going to focus on Purim, but we find other times in Nach where the Jews commit to a bris, like in say for Yehoshua, for example, and apparently that's not it, that's not the time when the Jews willingly accept the Torah. And in Megillas Esther, we don't really find a bris. What are we talking about there? We're talking about mitzvahs of Purim that they accepted. So the idea seems to be that when they accepted this mitzvah derabbanan, this idea that they're going to read the Megillah every year and commemorate God's miracle B'toch Esther. So that itself indicated an acceptance of the whole power of the Torah, an acceptance of the Torah itself. So that's a fascinating idea. How does the performance of a Din D'Rabbanan, how does that show that the whole Torah itself is being upheld? How is that a statement of acceptance of the Torah? So that, as Hashem, that's what we'll try to discuss on Sunday when we talk about some general ideas of the Koach of Chazal. So that should be a segue from one to the other. So you can think about that on Shabbos, and God willing, on Sunday we'll pick up with that. I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos as you encounter this memorable Maamar Har Sinai. Make sure to pay close attention and to internalize it, so that you can come with all that enthusiasm and excitement on Sunday, and we'll pick up from there. Okay, Chicago. Who's going to daven for us? Volunteers? Okay. Back. Very good.